The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on June 4, 2023. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning,
everybody. Yeah, well, this morning I thought I'd go through Dogen's universal recommendation for Zazen or sitting meditation. I've talked about this on many occasions before, and even did some series, I think a couple of times, six lectures or so on this piece, focusing in on, you know, each talk would be focusing on a little bit of it, and I've given other talks as well. Whenever I have spoken on this piece, I've usually just gone and looked at a little portion of it. But it occurred to me that we can end up kind of losing the forest for the trees, you might say, when you get in and look at the details in fine detail, might lose track of the overall sweep of the piece. So today, I thought what I would do is just go through the whole piece quite quickly, though not the whole piece, because what I've done here, I've reduced it, I've paraphrased it and reduced it a bit. I'll be skipping over the parts where he's giving it Zazen instruction on how to sit and hold your eyes and all of that, and maybe in a few other places too, and just getting kind of the essential message here. And so that's what I'm going to attempt today anyway, and we'll see where this goes. But I think this will give us a sense of the forest, you might say, the whole piece and what Dogen is getting at here. Then I think when I'm done too, I'm still going to be kind of doing this, looking at it little bits at a time. So I think when we're through this, I'm just going to read the whole thing through this paraphrased and reduced version of the Dogen's Fukan Zazengi. Okay, so Dogen writes that, this is me reducing it, but Dogen said that reality, he points out that reality is perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent on anything? Yeah, so here's reality is perfect, it's complete, it's whole. It's totality. This is perfection. It was when there's nothing left out. And it's all pervading. You know, you can't stick your head out of reality. It's all pervading. It's everywhere. There's nothing that is not of reality. So reality is perfect and all pervading. How could it be contingent on anything? Yeah, how could it be, if it's perfect, complete, total, already, and all-pervading, there's nothing that isn't of this, then how could it be contingent on anything? That would be absurd, actually. In fact, why would you take what is whole and total and represent it by something partial and incomplete? And that's kind of our problem, and the problem he points out here. So the reality is perfect is a reality with a capital R, of course, not your idea of reality or my idea or Dogen's idea of reality, but reality with a capital R is perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent upon anything? So what's the use of practice? Yeah, good question. It was Dogen's question before he met up with Rujing and completely saw what this practice is. So what's the use of practice then? If this is all-pervading and perfect, it's not contingent on anything, so what's the use of practice? But here's the problem. With even the slightest thought, reality appears as if not here, not now. And that's the problem that arises with this. So what's the use of practice? Well, here's the problem. With even the slightest thought, Dogen later is going to point out think not thinking. We'll get to that. But with just the slightest thought, already we have a problem. Reality appears as not here, not now. This reality, with a capital R, this is here. This is now. I've talked about this in many other occasions, but very quickly just to kind of remind you, when we're speaking of here, not here, like here I am in, sitting on this chair in this room, you know, like here, as if there could be someplace else, you know, over there, something of that sort. That's not the here, that we're speaking of here, or now. You think now is something like the present moment. There's the future and there's the past, but now, it's just right now, we'll say the present moment. And we'll look at these in time and space, here and now. But that's not reality, which is total and complete. Reality that we can realize and awaken to. These are just ideas of reality and here and now. And that there's a thing here, say me, for each of us, we can just say, here I am. Yeah. But what this is pointing out is that with reality, it's just here. There is no reality of there. It's just here. When we conceptualize the world, yeah, well, there's here and there. This is how we normally see everything. And that's fine. It's just that actually the experience of this moment is never there or at some other time. It is always now. And now isn't the present moment, because the present moment has to do with time. It's what's occurring between the past and the future, and then there's this present moment. But already, that's not real. It's already gone, that present moment. So if we place this in time and in space, as we normally do with our normal understanding of things, and it's perfectly fine to do this, by the way. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this. But we don't really see or understand what is actually taking place here. So this is the problem. So with even the slightest thought, that's how we get caught in something. As soon as there's a thought here, the thought of location, the thought of place or time, with just a single thought at all, if you think of something, some object, particularly a physical object, if you think, it's going to be located somewhere. You will imagine it with its kind of surroundings or relationships with other things. And it's occurring, you know, at a certain time, which we might say now. But actually, the now where you're thinking of that object or seeing it or touching it or whatever, that now has, I'm calling it now, that now is already gone. That's not actually now, but now is still here. It's always here and always now. This is not like the world that we talk about or the world that we think or feel or touch or reach out for something or try to get rid of something. That is a world of our thinking. That is a world of our concepts and ideas. That is a world that we put together and make it up in our minds. Well, Dogen isn't talking about that here. So when he says, is how can it be contingent on anything? Yeah, well, the problem is that even with the slightest thought, but that's where we are all the time, is with our thinking. Thoughts are coming up. We have ideas and notions about things. And we're completely caught up in that. And as long as we're caught up in that, and it's nothing wrong with that exactly, though it would be helpful if you realize that that's what you're doing. You're seeing a world of conceptual constructs. And you're measuring everything according to that. And the primary one that you measure everything against, of course, is me, you know, for each of us, you know, myself. You know, and here I am in relation to that thing over there, whatever it might be. But this is how we're thinking. Our speech comes out of that, the way we think, the way we interact with others is all coming out of that understanding. Again, there's nothing wrong with that, except when we mistake that for reality, which is complete and whole and total, and it's not an object. It's not something that you form in relation with or to or something like that. Okay, and that's the problem. So even with the slightest thought, then reality appears as if here and now. So now, in our conventional way of thinking about both here and now, with thought, the thought of anything, the idea, the notion, the formed concept of something in your mind, with this, now we've lost sight of reality as a whole, totality. We've lost sight of that. So even with the slightest thought, then reality appears as if not here, not now. And then with this, if the least like or dislike arises, so now there's things in the world. We're seeing it in this way. There's things in this world. That's how we take it in. That's how we see it. That's what we think is true and real. So with this, likes and dislikes arise. So if the least like or dislike arises, your mind is lost in confusion. Okay, it's fine to have preferences and likes and dislikes and that sort of thing, but just realize that ultimately, that isn't true. That isn't real. Would you prefer a door to a window or a window to a door? Does it matter? You know, is one better than the other or anything of this sort? In totality, as we begin to move out in that way, we can begin to see that all of this stuff that we occupy ourselves with, the this and that of things, this just entangles us and gets us caught up in a lot of confusion. And we'll favor some things over others. Many things we're neutral about. But we'll favor one thing over another. And here he says, if the least like or dislike arises, the mind is lost in confusion. And also, if the least like or dislike arises, you're here. You become something pretty solid and real in this picture. And again, that's where most of us are most of the time. But if the least like or dislike arises, your mind is lost in confusion. So Dogen says, you should therefore cease from practice based on intellectual understanding. This is important. The kind of, we might think, well, I'm not an intellectual person, and I just want to take a meditation, this sort of thing. But you've got ideas about that. You've got notions about it. You might take up meditation because you want it to help you in some way. It might help to lower your blood pressure or just to calm you down or something. Maybe it'll even bring you to enlightenment or something. But we'll have some ideas about that. And then along with this, of course, likes and dislikes arise. So what he's saying is that you should cease from practice based on intellectual understanding, the pursuing of words and following after speech. Again, ideas and notions. We'll talk with people about this. And well, this would be the best way to carry out this practice. And all sorts of things will come up, not just about this practice of meditation, but virtually everything else that we deal with in life. So he said, you should therefore cease from practice based on intellectual understanding, pursuing words and following after speech. If you want to attain suchness, if you want to just see directly and live out of that realization, direct realization of reality, if you want to attain suchness, you should practice suchness without delay. For this, a quiet room is suitable. Eat and drink moderately. Cast aside all involvements and cease all affairs. Yeah, so you want to settle all this, the mind down. You cast aside all involvements of the mind. Yeah, eat and drink moderately too. Don't sit with a full meal. It'll just put you to sleep. Or if you've been drinking, particularly alcohol or something, but even you've just had a little bit too much to drink of any kind of liquid, that won't be conducive to just sitting quietly in a quiet room. The room might be quiet, but then you're not. You've made it already complicated in that way. So eat and drink moderately, cast aside all involvements, and cease all affairs. Do not think in terms of good or bad. Do not administer pros and cons. Well, this is where we are, but of course, we do that when we're thinking about things. You know, and when we have the slightest thought, and now everything appears as if, well, it's over there, it's over here, I want this, and I don't want that. And there we are. So he says, and we're going to be thinking in terms of good and bad and all of that. But here he says, do not think in terms of good or bad. And do not administer pros and cons. Cease all movements of the conscious mind, the gauging of all thoughts and views. Have no expectations of becoming enlightened. And you have any ideas about that? You don't know what that is. You're just making something up about enlightenment. I, me, whatever that might be, you got notions and ideas about that. And you might think that that's very solid and real. Yeah, me, I mean, I am, and you know, I'd like to be enlightened. And, you know, and so we have all kinds of ideas that might come up. And we'll drag that to our meditation, and this is why I'm going to sit. We'll have our reasons as to why I'm going to sit. And I remember in the early days, I still hear it sometimes, where students would say things like, well, I need to sit. Well, you don't need to sit. Sitting isn't going to do anything for you. But just settle the mind a little bit. And watch, you know, if you're caught up in thinking good and bad and pros and cons, and you have some idea, well, why you're, you know, people might ask me, you know, why do I sit? Yeah, I can't tell you. And it isn't like I don't know. I'm fully aware of what this is, but it isn't like I've got a reason. But if you do have a reason, well, now the thought has arisen here. And along with that, pretty soon the likes and dislikes are occurring, and the shoulds and the shouldn'ts, and you know, we should sit, and I need to sit. Now, this is a complicated mind that carries on like that. All you need to do is recognize when that's going on in your mind and just see if you can just kind of drop all of that. All of it, really. You don't have to hang into any bit of it. You'll see as we go on, everything's going to go here. But do not think in these terms and seesaw movements of the conscious mind, and have no expectations of becoming enlightened. And he says, this is nothing to do with sitting or lying down, what we're looking at here, what Dogen is pointing to here. It has nothing to do with sitting or lying down. Now, this is interesting, because right away, then he goes right into it. At the sight of your sitting, once you have adjusted your posture, take a deep breath, inhale and exhale, rock your body right and left, and settle into a steady, immobile sitting position. Well, it has nothing to do with sitting or lying down, so why? Well, you're going to have to do something. You could stand, you know, but also a quiet room is suitable, just sitting down and settling yourself. But not with the idea that it's through this, my sitting down and quieting my mind and all that, that what, I might become awakened or my blood pressure will go down. Yeah, well, your blood pressure will probably come down and all that kind of stuff. But you're doing that for something else. You got an idea here about you're doing this here, this sitting right here, for something else over there. That's when all the likes and dislikes arise and all of this. And this is out of some kind of thought that you have. And whoever taught you this, you don't find this from teachers like Dogen, that they're teaching you to think this or that or to do it for this reason. And this is what will come about as a result of that. You'll become enlightened in something like this. Though the way he words it here, it might seem that he might be pointing in that way. But it just simply doesn't work that way. This sitting itself is awakening, which also doesn't make any sense to us. Because we think, well, I am something and I want to awaken and I do this so I can get it. Yeah, that's our ordinary understanding of everything. It works like that. But not this matter of finally getting out of our confusion about the nature of reality. And that's what we're dealing with here. Okay. So it has nothing to do with sitting or lying down. But then at the sight of your sitting, yeah, he says, adjust your posture, take a deep breath, inhale, and rock your body, all of that. He has quite a bit more, but that's kind of where I left it. But then he says, so after you've done all this and you get it settled into a steady, immobile sitting position, then he says, think of not thinking. How do you think of not thinking? Non-thinking. Now, Steve just gave a talk on this, you know, pointing to this just recently. Was it a couple Sundays ago? I don't remember now, but an excellent, excellent job of that. And I've talked about this enough before, but just to say maybe quickly here, when he says, think of not thinking, well, this first think here is just our usual thinking, you know, with ideas and this sort of thing. But he's saying, think, not think. But that first one there, that's our conceptualizing. We have notions, ideas, beliefs, opinions, all of that. And that's our thinking. It's always engaged in that kind of stuff, in the conceptual. What we've packaged, how we've packaged reality and all of that in our minds. And then we believe much of this stuff and constantly weighing it out. This is where all that activity is. Here we're talking about just let go of these things. But what is that then? Well, this think of not thinking, this not thinking is just the perceptual, which is always ongoing. You can't start that or stop it. It's just there. But we don't tend to notice that because we're so engaged in our thinking. This is about learning to just let go of your thinking, your grasping, your conceptualizing, your believing in this or that, or notions you have even about what the use of Zazen is for, and that sort of thing. All of this is confusion. And it's how we kind of bumble our way through life in the world, not fully knowing. We know enough about this and that as we encounter it, generally. Sometimes we don't, and we get in real trouble in various ways. But constantly just kind of, you know, bungling our way through through life in many ways. This is about, at least for this moment, just sit down. Settle down. Settle your mind. And if you notice that you're caught up in a thought or whatever, just don't try to drive it out. You can't do that. But just notice that's happening. And realize that this isn't really necessary. So you think not thinking, because this not thinking is continuously on. This is the perceptual experience. This is the mind is up and running. And this mind, I don't mean it's not your mind. This is reality, we could say, is up and running. So he says, how do you think of not thinking? Yeah, non-thinking. So there's non-thinking that he's speaking of. This is pointing right at the perceptual, which is always ongoing, along with, but by itself even, but very often with the conceptual. And the conceptual is so noisy, it so much engages us with our thoughts and views and our likes and dislikes and all of this, that there we are. We're endlessly there. We're oblivious to this, which is just the mind is up and on and running. This is a reality with a big R already. And it is right there. It is not something foreign to you, or something that you need to obtain or something, because it's already thus, you know. But so think of not thinking. You know, how would you do that? Well, this is non-thinking. And then he says, this is the essential art of Zazen. This, just dropping. It doesn't mean to squelch the thinking that's going on in your mind, to force it out, and don't sit there thinking, oh, there I go again, I'm thinking. No, you're thinking and saying something like that to yourself. It's just kind of just dispassionately notice that this is going on. It's perfectly fine. You can tell yourself this is perfectly fine. But little by little, maybe you can learn not to engage it so much. And little by little, it can begin to drop away and start to settle out a little more. But the mind isn't shutting down. It's still right there. There's the perceptual is still up and running. But don't do anything about that. Don't start conceptualizing about that and then thinking, oh, yeah, there it is. Or you go looking for it or whatever. Don't do any of these things. Don't do anything. Just sit there and notice what's actually taking place. And then he says, this is the essential art of Zazen, the practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment, the manifestation of ultimate reality. Traps and snares can never reach it. Truth simply manifests truth, and from the first, dullness and distraction are struck aside. So truth, this reality with a capital R, it manifests truth. Nothing but truth. Reality manifests reality. There's nothing you can do about it or that you need to do about it. You only need to notice this. That's all. But even in using words like this and pointing at that, it's even too much. But just begin to notice. And again, also pay attention to the noise and the clutter and the screaming and hollering, jumping around and getting excited or running in fear or noticing the actual direct confusion. Just never mind all of that. Don't try to drive it out. Just realize what's going on there, but don't say anything. Don't even comment. You don't have full realization isn't going to come with words attached. You're describing what's going on. Don't do that. You don't need to do that. You can wordlessly notice what's going on. And never mind that. Just come back to right here, right now. Just breathing in, breathing out. But with this, truth simply manifests truth, and from the first, dullness and distraction are struck aside. If we actually settle into this realization of truth, it's constantly manifesting. Reality is manifesting reality here. And with this, dullness and distraction aren't there with it. That is being caught up in the conceptual. Again, this isn't a stark thing, like a cut off the conceptual and now be in it. Don't even look at it that way. It just isn't like that at all. There's what is coming up in the mind is not wrong or evil or bad or needs to be driven out. But it does. Even after meditating, I've been meditating now over 50 years, I know, but I don't. But even now, stuff comes up in the mind. But it's a matter of, don't do anything about it. It doesn't last. That's another thing, too. If you don't play with thoughts or whatever, whether they're fearful ones or exciting ones or whatever, if you don't play with these things, they don't stick around. even if they do stick around, they keep permutating so fast, you can't even really say they're the same thoughts you had 5 minutes ago, even though it seems to be evolved out of what I had, you know, all of that. But you don't need to engage any of this. It's just a matter of being aware that, you know, this is what goes on in the mind. If you start thinking, well, yeah, but I'm supposed to be quiet, I'm supposed to have a quiet. Yeah, well, you say so. I'm not telling, Dogen isn't telling you to do that. But if you stop engaging this stuff, the natural home of the mind is just to become quiet and settle down of its own. You can't bring that about. All you do is continue to disturb your mind. So with this, then, the realizing the truth manifesting itself directly and dullness and distraction are struck aside. And then he says, as for the bringing about of enlightenment by the opportunity provided by a finger, a banner, a needle, or a mallet, and the effecting of realization with the aid of a whisk, a fist, a staff, or a shout, this can't be fully understood by your discriminative thinking. It can't be known by the practicing or realizing of supernatural powers either. So drop such notions. Okay, so this sort of thing, we hear stories of this, Gute uses the one finger, he just kind of points, lifts one finger, you ask him anything, so he has that, and someone might see that and then they awaken or whatever, or they see a banner blowing in the wind or whatever it might be, a staff, a shout. But what's going on here, and then we have these koans or whatever, and they'll say, and then so-and-so awakened, or something like this. And then we might wonder about that and what happened there. Sometimes people will even try to duplicate the action that was described or something. Totally not necessary. In fact, worthless, useless. I mean, it doesn't mean anything at all. But what's going on here, it won't be understood by your discriminative thinking. You're conceptualizing. That's what discriminative thinking is. You're drawing distinctions, separating one thing from another in your mind and trying to weigh things out and try. That's not enlightenment. That's not awakening. You're not going to figure this out. The stone hits bamboo and bonk, you hear that sound and then so-and-so awakens. What is that? And then you want to figure that one out? What do you think you're going to do there? Do you understand? This is, now you're forming a thought. And with this, right at the very beginning, when he says at least like and dislike arises there. Or if this does arise in your mind, and now you're lost in confusion. So this sort of thing, we hear these stories, and then so-and-so, gazed at peach blossoms and then awoke, this sort of thing. Don't try to figure this out. It can't be known by the practicing or realizing of supernatural powers or by your discriminative thinking, he says. So just drop this worthless pursuits, these worthless pursuits of these things. Don't think about them. The story is told, pointed out. Yeah. The understanding of that is already there. If you start thinking about it, you're going to lose it. You're going to drive it out. You don't need to think about Gute and Gute's one finger or Gensha's, all the world is one bright pearl. Then we try to think about it. So we have these koans and things, and then, they're like little, some people describe them like little puzzles or something. They're not puzzles. But something a little confusing there, and then they want to figure it out so they get the answer and that sort of thing. Don't misunderstand. This is about ceasing practice based on intellectual understanding, the gauging of all thoughts and views and all this kind of. Just don't engage that stuff in that way. And the same thing, too, with the finger and the banner and the mallet and the whatever here. So just drop such notions. And then he said, So just going on, so this won't be known through the practicing or realizing of supernatural powers. Yeah, and get ideas like that and notions of that sort. Just drop that. What's being pointed to here is prior to your ideas, thoughts, and conceptions. Just understand that, this matter of finally not being confused is in waking up to what is right here, right now. It's not something you have to go after. You just need to wake up to it. But it has nothing to do with your ideas, thoughts, and conceptions. Ideas, thoughts, and conceptions are very useful and handy. It's not like there's something wrong with any of that stuff. It's just that with that, if you're going to try to somehow use that and figure out your way to enlightenment or something like this, you're going to perpetuate the confusion that's this base confusion that is always there with the least thought arising. So that's all Dogen is pointing out here. So he said, this being the case, then, intelligence or lack of it does not matter. Between the dull and the sharp-witted, there is no distinction. Yeah, so since this isn't about you thinking it through and getting the right idea and forming a complex theory or something of this to explain it all and that sort of thing, that's not what this is about at all. That'll only trap you, actually. So this being the case, intelligence or lack of it does not matter. Between the dull and the sharp-witted, there is no distinction. Dogen was a pretty sharp guy himself, but he's telling us that don't rely on the intellect, your ability to conceptualize and make sense of things in that way. This isn't going to help you. So whether you're intellectual or not, this doesn't matter. He said, if you concentrate your effort single-mindedly, that in itself is negotiating the way. So just learn to concentrate your effort, to come back and to realize the things that are coming up in the mind and floating around. Now, it takes some time, like when we do a formal practice of meditation, Zazen, you're setting aside a little time. See, you don't have to be engaged in a lot of other things. Your mind will probably still be active with stuff if you've been working hard all day on some problem or whatever. And now just sit down. And your mind might keep pranking away on some of that, but that's okay. Just sit there. That's all. That's what this is about. It's not further engagement with the problems of the day or or any of that other stuff. And yeah, but I can't drop it, you might say. I can't drop the... Yeah, sure. Yeah, you can't. No, but they will drop away if you just don't keep picking them up. So, but gradually we can learn this. But what's being pointed to here is prior to your ideas and that sort of thing. So the intelligence or the lack of it, you know, there's no distinction. If you just concentrate your effort single-mindedly, that is negotiating the way. Practice realization is naturally untainted. And going forward is a matter of everydayness. Just in your everyday life, just go forward. It's good to regularly come back to maybe settling the mind, as he says, a quiet room is suitable, all of that. Yeah, to do that on a regular basis would be very helpful. But don't wait for that. Throughout the day, there's ample opportunities here and there to come back. Watch your mind. Notice the engagement, your engagement with thoughts and views, and how many of them are nonsense, worthless. They'll get you excited or make you fearful or angry or any number of things can go on there with that. And all the while distracting you totally from what is quietly there, this basis, which is reality itself. So you don't need to engage those things. And then with this, then, this practice realization, it's not tainted. It's not tainted by all of these kinds of various things that we can easily latch onto and grasp and feel like we have to force through or figure them out and untangle them or whatever. And going forward is just a matter of everydayness. You can practice this at any moment, every day, and you can always come back to this. But of course, in our busy day, it might be a little difficult, but you can set aside some time on a regular basis as well, where you really can set aside the telephone and the job, whatever else it might be. So why leave behind the seat that exists in your home and go aimlessly off to the dusty realms of other lands? Yeah, you don't need to go somewhere special, you know, to do this and go off to some other lands. You know, I went off to Japan. Well, my teacher sent me to Japan, and I spent some time in a monastery there and stuff like this. But that's not really required. And what I learned there, I can't really apply to anything. But it was interesting. I'm glad I had that experience, but it's not required. Not for this matter of just simply waking up. So you don't need to go off to the dusty realms of other lands. If you make one misstep, there's so many ways now that you can trip yourself up. So if you make one misstep, you depart from what even now is directly before you, he says. So that's not necessary. This is so easy. You could take it up anytime, anywhere, and you can do that even now, and even while you're listening to this talk, which doesn't mean then to be spacing away in some dreamland. It would mean listening to the talk. But that's all. It doesn't mean memorizing the talk, or as Suzuki Roshi says, to be able to walk out of here and then repeat it or something like that to someone else. That's not really required. So then he says, please, honored followers of Zen, long accustomed to groping for something to take hold of, do not be suspicious of the true way. Simply devote your energies to a practice that directly indicates reality and just get on with it. So I'll open it up for questions too, but I think it might help now if I can just read this through directly without me chopping it up as we go. So this is basically Dogen's message here. Reality is perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent upon anything? So what's the use of practice? Here's the problem. With even the slightest thought, reality appears as if not here, not now. If the least like or dislike arises, your mind is lost in confusion. You should therefore cease from practice based on intellectual understanding, pursuing words and following after speech. If you want to attain suchness, but that's just this, direct realization of just thus. If you want to attain suchness, you should practice suchness without delay. For this, a quiet room is suitable. Eat and drink moderately, cast aside all involvements and cease all affairs. Do not think in terms of good or bad. Do not administer pros and cons. Cease all movements of the conscious mind, the gauging of all thoughts and views. Have no expectations of becoming enlightened. This has nothing to do with sitting or lying down. At the sight of your sitting, once you have adjusted your posture, take a deep breath, inhale and exhale, rock your body right and left, and settle into a steady, immobile sitting position. Think of not thinking. How do you think of not thinking? Non-thinking. This is the essential art of Zazen, the practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment, the manifestation of ultimate reality. Traps and snares can never reach it. Truth simply manifests truth. And from the first, dullness and distraction are struck aside. As for the bringing about of enlightenment by the opportunity provided by a finger, a banner, a needle, or a mallet, and the effecting of realization with the aid of a whisk, a fist, a staff, or a shout, this can't be fully understood by your discriminative thinking. It can't be known by the practicing or realizing of supernatural powers either. So drop such notions. What's being pointed to here is prior to your ideas, thoughts, and conceptions. This being the case, intelligence or lack of it does not matter. Between the dull and the sharp-witted, there is no distinction. If you concentrate your efforts single-mindedly, that in itself is negotiating the way. Practice realization is naturally untainted. Going forward is a matter of everydayness. So why leave behind the seat that exists in your home and go aimlessly off to the dusty realms of other lands? If you make one misstep, you depart from what is even now directly before you. Please, honored followers of Zen, long accustomed to groping for something to take hold of, do not be suspicious of the true way. Simply devote your energies to a practice that directly indicates reality. And just get on with it. Okay. Well, that was my reduced rendition of what Dogen was saying there. I hope I didn't violate it too badly. Any questions about this? Or anyone out in Zoom land? Yeah, Cindy.
Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Thank you for the talk. You mentioned about how sometimes we hear a teaching in Zen, and you gave an example of good taste finger, Genshin's one bright pearl, and then we just kind of think of that.
Yeah.
And when it, sometimes with, hearing certain Dharma talks, maybe, one this morning, I notice that, I hear something that is pointing to something, and...
Yeah, that's the problem. It's not pointing to something, but it's pointing. Just understand, though, that I'm not saying to not think about it. I don't think I said that. It might have sounded like it. But just recognize that you're thinking. So, yeah, we have the example of Gute's one finger and this sort of thing, and then our mind might even depart from the talk at that point, and you start thinking about that a little bit, and then you come back. And that's, we'll naturally do things like that. But what this is about is just simply to realize what's actually taking place. And what's taking place is the mind is engaged in thinking about, you know, that particular koan or something, and then you realize that you've wandered off, so you just come back. But that's all it is. This isn't about stopping your thoughts. You can't do that. I can't do that. I've been at this a long time. I can't just stop my thoughts. But I do know if I don't engage them, they don't, of their own, they don't stick around. Even when we are engaging them, they keep mutating and changing in various ways, and new thoughts will come in, and memories of, oh yeah, well that's right, this applies here then, and then somebody might say something, and but you know, none of this is holding still. But this isn't about just forcing all of that to just shut down and go quiet, and certainly not within your own mind, you don't need to do that, and of course you can't do that in your surroundings as well, particularly say if you're out in a kind of a very noisy public place or whatever, or you're sitting on the park bench and people are coming by. It isn't a matter of shutting anything out. It's just a matter of noticing what's taking place. And when I say noticing what's taking place, it's not commenting on what is taking place. That's just more thinking. And that's the thing we have to notice, like, oh, no, look at that. Now you can see that you're commenting on it. But even there, what I just did right there, I'm commenting on that. It's just, we can start to realize that just how simple this is. And as my teachers used to say, you know, this practice, this way is very simple. The problem is with us and our minds. Our minds are complicated, and we continuously make things complicated. It's very difficult for us to just realize what's happening and drop it. Just let it go. And of course, part of that is it might be frustrating because when we say something like drop it, well, it doesn't just drop like that. Yeah, most of the time it probably doesn't. But if you don't engage it, it of its own, it will drop away. It could be replaced by other things. Yeah, that's not unusual, you know, but then they'll drop away too. But also it could not be replaced by anything at all for a time. And pretty soon the mind will come up with something again. And this is, you know, how it is. The mind, things will come up in the mind. And they'll go. Something else will come up and it'll go. And that's what we can learn to do. And what we don't understand is that what it is that we, what can I say? If we're interested in awakening, enlightenment, something of that sort, and I'd get rid of those words, but we just really want to know what's going on here. There isn't anything you need to do about that because it's not about finding something. This is already the case. Enlightenment, awakening. You're never apart from it. It's just a matter of realizing what's actually going on. And it is just simply that. So there's nothing you need to do about it. What you need to be watching is how you get distracted. Now, some of these distractions might not be distractions because you need to do that. You need to learn how to work this machine or whatever it might be, you know. But, and that's fine. But this matter of finally realizing the nature of what's unfolding here, that isn't going to come through your discriminative thinking, as Dogen said. It doesn't come to you, I mean, because you already have this. You already have this knowledge, full, complete, total knowledge of reality. We all do. It's not something that you can go after and find. It's something you need to wake up to that's been here all along. Right now, as we all sit here, wherever you are, You're in it now. As he said, what was it at the very beginning here, reality, we can't depart from it, you know? It's all pervading, yeah. And it's not contingent on anything. So this is always the case. But it's our thinking, see? But here's the problem. With even the slightest thought, reality appears, maybe the way I put it here isn't helpful, but as not here and not now, it appears as, there's a thing here and there's something there and it can move to there and, you know. That's all confusion. Because that doesn't make sense. There are things I could say, but I could give whole lectures on just that little point there. But then we're lost in confusion. We have to think. We have to use concepts and stuff like this. There's nothing wrong with that. But the mistake is that we think somehow that in doing that we are somehow gripping, getting a handle on, improving reality or something of that sort. And that just simply is not the case. That we're perpetuating the very confusion that drives so much pain in our lives. So I don't know, Cindy, did I take it away from where you were with that? I kind of cut in there, but...
Well, that was helpful. I think... that was good. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yeah, Mary.
I just have a comment. I thought your discussion of here and now was very helpful.
Oh.
I think that can be very confusing.
Yes, yeah.
And you said you could say more about it, maybe we will at some point.
Oh, yeah.
That was very, very helpful.
Yeah, and I have already, actually.
In my own experience, I have to hear it over and over again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But sometimes it really just penetrates.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the strange thing about this sort of teaching. And the same thing with me. Katagiri would say something when he says it. Sometimes it'd be like the first time, maybe it's only the first time it finally was registering with me that he's been saying. Sometimes I'll realize that this is something he's repeated a few times, but it's like I'm oblivious. But then there's a moment where all of a sudden you realize, oh, that's what he's saying. That's what he's pointing out. Something of that sort. We have to hear it over and over again. The idea that I myself at some point would eventually start talking, giving talks like this. At that time, I didn't really think of it. I was just too shy. It never occurred to me. I went, don't do it here. The idea that I could get up and talk about this was totally foreign to me. I mean, I couldn't have imagined it. I don't know. When I started to understand what this teaching was and pointing to it, I didn't think it was even possible to say anything. But what it is that, and you can't, I can't either, but it isn't even that. What we find out is you can tap into this true knowledge that reality is perfect, it's all pervading. It isn't mine, wasn't my teacher's, Katagiri's, it's not the Buddha's, it's not Dogen. It's just this reality, it's just a matter of finally waking up. And at some point, when we begin to see how words can easily deceive and confuse people, particularly if we're using them in conventional ways, where we're trying to point to something which can't, the conventional way, it won't grasp it, won't even point to it, really. There's another way to speak. So all of this comes about, very slowly. The seeing of it, that's going to probably just be in an instant. But what you can express about that or how to point in this sort of thing, that'll come very slowly. So even if you hear a teaching over and over and you say, I get that, But then, it's like it was with me, but Katagiri, 5 minutes later, I don't remember what he said now. But it's just simply that. I was still trying to put it into a conceptual form. And of course, that'll start to disintegrate in no time at all. And that's why we have a hard time with this. But if we can actually see what's being pointed to, that won't happen. Then maybe we can find a way to begin to speak. Jose, did you say there was...
Frank has a question.
Frank?
Frank.
Uh-huh.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah,
hi, Frank. Thanks for talking today. You come back to this point about not using the separate thought, and our practice pretty often.
Not using what?
Conceptual thought. We're not relying on conceptual thought.
Central?
Conceptual.
Oh, conceptual. Okay, conceptual thought, yes, okay.
So I've heard you say that many times. And then you write all these books on physics and talk about particles and time and space. Can you hear me okay?
Not very well. I'm having a hard time making out what you're saying.
He said he's talking, you talk about conceptual thought, but then you talk about physics, particles, time and space.
Yeah.
I find the science really helpful for me to prove that.
Well, there's nothing to prove. Yeah, there's nothing to prove. And when I do resort to things like that, sometimes people think that I'm using them to bolster what it is I'm pointing out or saying. And no, it's kind of the almost the other way around, is that these are examples of that show up with close examination, with science, particularly physics, is a close examination of the physical world. And there, they might stumble on these things that appear like conundrums and difficulty and things like that, and you know, give us difficulty. And so sometimes I'll point to those kinds of things as just examples of, you know, okay, here, you take a close look at the physical world, and in some ways it won't make sense to you. But again, the reason it doesn't make sense to us, and this is also what I try to point out, but it seems to get lost, but the reason it doesn't make sense to you is because, well, as Dogen would say, because you're thinking. You got ideas about how things are, and that there, say, there is a physical world outside of my mind, and but it's out of that physical world that my mind was created, because out of that physical world my brain was created, and then with my brain now I have a mind and all. And it's all this kind of thought that is going on, and these ideas and theories, and people deeply believe this, and yet if you look at it very carefully, you can see that that's absolutely nonsense, that mind is immediate. It is not contingent on anything. It is immediate. The physical world is not. We induce that. You know, we come up with the notions of that, the ideas about it. Because what is mind? Well, there's seeing, there's the tactile sensation, there's hearing and tasting and thinking. This is mind directly. That's not based on anything else. That's direct, that's immediate. But the physical world, that's an idea, that's a construct. And so that's kind of secondary. So I don't use that to support what I'm pointing at, which is mind. No, but people might look at it. But I can, in doing what I'm doing, I can also show why so much of what's going on with that theory of the physical world, that it's out there and it's somehow producing mind and creating mind, this is just loaded with contradictions. That's what the hard problem is, for example, for those of you who might know the hard problem in David Chalmers' work there. Anyway, but this is kind of a big area to get into. We've already used the hour, but I don't know, did that help you at all, Frank?
I agree with everything you said. It is very helpful to go into the science, to disprove science. So I don't know if I think
well,
it's unhelpful.
Yeah, I wouldn't even go so far as to say I'm not interested in disproving science necessarily. I'm just interested in pointing out where we're confused and why we're confused. And in the area of science, the massive area where we're convinced, and also brain science and all the ideas that we have and about artificial intelligence, all of this stuff, the big confusion is that we don't understand mind. And I'm not talking about my mind or your mind. I'm talking about reality. Reality and mind are synonymous. It's one and the same thing that we're pointing at there. And mind is fundamental. Consciousness is fundamental. And it shows up in the form of there's hearing and tasting and thinking and feeling and all of this. That's direct. But it's the objects that we project out there that we think are generating the sight and the sound and the taste and the feel and the thought and the whatever. That's we don't understand that that's induced. That's not a given. And that's all I'm trying to point out with that, yeah. And so science is kind of, but not just science, all of us in so many fundamental ways are just confused at the base level of when we look at reality and try to contemplate and understand the nature of reality. We're just completely off the mark. We can understand, if we can understand, what people like Dogen and Wang Po and others, you know, point out. Okay, well, we have gone over the hour here, so I probably should end it. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.